Welcome to one last session with yours truly. Looking forward to this last day. Hoping it can work out a little, at least a little bit like I planned. What I'd like to start with today is just a short time of prayer. This time I'm just going to leave it open for anyone that wants to pray. And then I'll just close it. So let's just bow our heads, and if you feel led to pray out loud or like to pray out loud, please do. Let's pray.
Father in heaven, I thank you for this.
And take out the song, Can the World See Jesus? We will sing through the whole thing once. And I'm hoping at the end to have time to say, read, or quote these three verses together that we've been talking about and to sing these three songs. So I'm hoping to have about 5 minutes at the end for that. Also, having enough of time for a little bit of open sharing. Just to show you, make sure you know how we do this. Verse 1, we'll sing just like we did yesterday. It goes the whole way to the end there. Except for that last little U. Go back to verse 2 and exercise. The gain is small. And go to the end of the course there. When they look at me. We started on the third verse. Let no man despise thy youth. I would like to sing that line in unison. Everyone's singing the melody. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou examples of the truth. And you'll see a little word coda. That means, and I don't think the coda ever got on here, but we jump down to the end of the third score. Be thou examples of the truth. It's the chorus, actually the refrain. In word, in spirit, in faith, in charity. We'll break into parts right there. And when we get to, can the world see Jesus when they look at me? Then we'll go back to the beginning of the chorus, like, can the world see Jesus when they look at your life? Are you faithful in the spiritual strife? Are you thoroughly confused yet? Okay, I'll finish, then I'll go back over it again. And then when we get to the end, instead of saying, can the world see Jesus when they look at me, we will jump to the you. Okay, so let me go over that third verse again. I'll just read through it, and hopefully you can follow. This part's unison. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou examples of the truth. And we break into parts at the end of the third score. In word, in spirit, in faith and charity, can the world see Jesus when they look at me? And from there we jump up to the end of the second score. Can the world see Jesus when they look at your life? Are you faithful in the spiritual strife? In word, in spirit, in faith and charity, can the world see Jesus when they look at you? Now you follow that? Anyone still thoroughly confused? Okay, enough of you got it, we can do that. All right, let's sing through it. Let's stand up and sing it. Sing it with conviction. Okay, this is a question that you should ask yourself often. What do people see when they look at me? Thank you. That was wonderful. Take out a piece of paper, two questions for today. Just to give them a little frame, our theme today especially is going to be, do not let anyone belittle your youth. And we talked about what that was yesterday. Question I have for you today that I want you to write something down for is, and it can be a yes or, it's basically a yes or no answer. Do you have a dream for how you want to serve and be an example of the believer? Do you have in your mind a specific dream or a vision of how you want to be an example of a believer or of a way to serve God? Maybe I'll broaden that out just a little bit in your mind. And I'm thinking of the future, not long future. It can be just a few years, but do you have something in your mind that you would like to do to be an example of a believer serving God? And if you remember the pattern from yesterday, number two is, what is it? And if you don't really have one, if you did put a no down for the first one, would you like to have one? You can answer that one. So if you put yes for the first one, put down what it is. If you put no, just think about, would you like to have one? And before we do the turn and talk to each other, I'm just going to share a little bit of my own experience along that line. Before I graduated from high school, I did have a dream, a vision of what I wanted to do. I still don't remember exactly where I heard about these things, but I did know that there were boys' camps. And I remember while I was still in school thinking, you know, I would really like to go and be a counselor at a boys' camp. Not exactly sure why, because when I think back of my life at that time, it's like, so what the world? I mean, I probably needed to be there as a boy myself. But it was a dream that I had, and I really did want to do it. It was something I wanted to do. And so I think it was actually before I graduated, I had actually worked it out, talked to my parents or whatever, and had their permission to go. Before I went on a trip with my other high school teacher and a van load of people up into Northern Ontario to teach some summer Bible school at three different places. One was basically a Mennonite community, but it was a lot of Mennonites. And the other two were more in Indian reservation areas. I had a really good time. So when I came back from that, I did. I was still 18. It was a fall of the year. I graduated school. I went down to Fairplay, South Carolina as a counselor. There were a lot of good things that happened to me there. I'm not going to talk about all the other people, but I know God did a lot of work in my life, and I'm sure some other people had to put up with some other things. But I just want to encourage you that if you do have a dream that you wrote on your paper, a vision, don't ever be embarrassed about it. Give it to God. And He may open the doors for you. He may want you to wait. I value my time there, even though I realize now that I probably should have waited at least 2 years and got a little less immature before I went and tried to help other young people become what God wanted them to be. But God will use those times. What I want you to do is, again, try to keep your groups as small as you reasonably can and still get everyone matched up. But I'd like for you to just talk. If you have a dream down there, talk to the other person about it. You don't have to go into a lot of detail. Just say what it is. If all you did was want one, make sure the other person knows that. And then I'd like for you to just spend a minute or less than a minute just saying a prayer for each other about that. If they have a dream, just ask God to bless that person's dream however He wants to. If they want one, ask God to give them a dream. Okay? So the time's yours for about 2 or 3 minutes here. Okay, thank you. And just want you to know that God will bless any desire that He has put in your heart to be an example to Him. It may require some patience on your part, Him working you through some preparation, but encourage each other in those things. I'm going to save our sharing time for the end, just to keep things moving here. One practice I have that has been a big blessing to me is to take a passage that I feel like has really spoken to me and paraphrase it. Put it in my own terms. It helps me concretely think about, so what did this verse say to me? And this is what I come up with this one. Do not allow any person the opportunity to make light of your youth. Instead, be a good example of the faithful ones. And if I was going to keep working on it, I would probably work on that last part. So what does faithful ones mean? I'll let you work on that one yourself. One reason I paraphrase it that way is because it's one thing that I firmly believe about God is that He never, while we're in this life, takes away the freedom of choice. We always have a choice of what we're going to do with our life. And this is one of them that He gives a youth. You can live in a way that gives people opportunity to belittle and make light of your youth. But you can choose to say, I am going to follow what I know is right and be an example of that. It's a conscious thing. Your youth, you can't help. I was a youth one time too. I never told anybody that before. You're the first ones that heard that. Just kidding. All right. We all have to go through it. That is not a choice. But what we do with that is a choice. And I encourage every young person to think in terms of taking full personal responsibility for everything you do. Don't take Saul's example and start making excuses and said, I did this, but this is why. Okay? And he always blamed it on somebody else. Never allow yourself that privilege. You may think that somebody made you do something, but if that thought comes to your mind right away, say, wait a minute. How can I take personal responsibility for that event? God will give you the grace to change your life if you start facing your life that way. Just taking a few of the words as we go down through this verse, but let's read it together first just to get it in our minds. 1 Timothy 4:12. Okay, we sang it, but we'll read it together again. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. I want to look at each one of those important noun words. A believer, right up here, I tell you what, I believe that means. Matter of fact, the word believe, believer, faith, faithful, if I understand it right, they all have the same Greek root word. I learned enough of Greek in Bible school that I can recognize words and I can actually read it. That doesn't mean I know what I'm reading. But if you look in a Greek verse, you'll see the word that's up there for believer, and it looks like the one that's down there for faith. Just a little different. So a believer is a person that believes in something, which means you have faith in something. And two other words that Brother John has mentioned that go along with these, they don't have the same Greek roots, but are trust and obey. And I never heard him or anyone else say that Hans Denk said that faith is obedience. But I heard someone say it just not long ago, and that really rings true in my heart. If you really have faith in something, you will put it into action. And James talks all about that.
Would you say that trust
Yeah, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be faithful to Jesus. I don't think there's a word, but it's all the same thing. So if you are a believer, you will be a person of obedience to that belief. And right there is where you can start to be an example. If you say that you believe something, one of the first questions they ask you is, do you believe there's a God? If you're going to say you believe that, your life needs to be an example that you believe there is a God. And there are ways that you can actually show it. If you believe that he cares about you, that was another question I asked you. If you really believe that, your life can be an example of a person that believes God cares about them. And I will promise you that you can tell people that and they might say, oh wow. But if they actually see you doing that, that you start acting those kind of things out, you will have spoken louder to them than you can yell. Because they cannot, some people will refuse to believe things they see, but they know down in their heart that they're just being stupid. People do not just walk away and not be somehow impressed by an obvious truth. If they reject an obvious truth, I think in their heart they know they did. And their life is going to take those kinds of courses from people that just are completely obstinate and whatever other words you want to give them. But I want to take a good look at some of these things that he says that we are areas, that we are examples. And the first two, I feel like are pretty important. He says to be an example in word. I'm going to let you look this up yourself. You're probably familiar with it. James chapter 3 is the biggest passage in the Bible that I know about that speaks specifically about your tongue, the instrument God gave you to make words. It says some, I don't even know what word to use. They're just really, you look at them and try to take them at face value. It's kind of hard. I've taught through James a couple of times in school, and every time I go through these, I'm thinking, wow, is this really true? Is this really true what James says about the tongue? And you can turn in there and look. I'm going to mention a few of them. One thing he says there, if you do not offend in word, you are a perfect man. I assume that applies to the women too. But maybe it's harder for them not to offend in word than the men. I don't know. Some of them talk more. But if you can actually have a life where you say, just say a whole bunch of things and you never offend anybody, and I'm going to tell you what I think about the word offend just so you know what I'm talking about. Offending somebody is not making them angry. I would like to get that out of everybody's head. Offending somebody is leading them to do the wrong thing. It's leading them to sin. So if you can have a vocabulary or a string of words your whole life that never leads anybody into any kind of sin, you are a perfect person. That is pretty powerful. That's a pretty high standard to set for yourself or for anybody else, but we don't have as much trouble setting it for other people. It's what he says. Another thing he says, that if you can control your tongue, This one really grabs me. If you can control your tongue, you can control the rest of your body. We talked about purity the other day, and I mentioned the day before that several areas of life. If you can have a pure tongue, that means you're able to control your whole body. That is amazing to me. That tongue is an amazing little instrument that God gave us. And unfortunately gets us into a lot of trouble. Another thing he says about the tongue in that passage, and this is depressing every time I think about this, he calls it a world of iniquity. So right away, these amazing things he said about it, suddenly it's kind of like he pulls a thing just right out of her hand and says, just forget about that. It's a world of iniquity. It ignites fires. Okay? Remember I told you that I kind of imagine every war that starts has something to do with some conflict, and I tend to think that it probably was words somewhere. Them's fighting words, and I declare war. Right? So it sets fires all over nature. And what's worse, it's not just any fire. He says the tongue is set on the fire of hell. So these are horrible fires. That's a really bad commentary. So when I think about being a perfect man and controlling my whole body, it suddenly does not look very possible. Not only that, he wasn't done talking about it. He says you can't control it. He says man has tamed every kind of beast except the tongue. It just hasn't happened. It's really, really, really bad. And not only that, he says your tongue is full of lethal poison. It's a killer. He finished up by saying, so with this tongue, we bless God and we curse men who are created to look like God. And I like his final words. They're kind of anticlimactical, but they're so true. He says, brothers, this shouldn't be. Well, how can we help it? If we have a tongue that is that bad, how can we help it? Paul tells Timothy, don't let any person have the opportunity to make light of your youth, but be an example of a believer with your tongue. When Jesus finished giving the Sermon on the Mount, after he had just said all those words, remember Jesus was a perfect man, and he says to be like him, so I'm going to right away tell you this is not an impossibility. But this is what the people said. He speaks as one having authority, not as the scribes or not as the other spiritual leaders. What was different? Any clue what was different? Well, let's keep thinking about that. Be an example with your tongue. I'm going to jump right into the next one, because I want to tie these two together, because I really think they are kind of a part of each other. But he says, be an example in conversation. Now, I'll give you a little bit of history on that word. Not because I'm a great historian, but I did look a little bit, and I was taught when I was pretty young that conversation in the Bible does not mean conversation. Okay? It's more like, probably a better word to put in here, one we talked about just the other day in our panel discussion, is culture or lifestyle or manner of living. It says, be an example in the way you live. Some good synonyms for that are behavior, conduct, culture. I think maybe taking it a little farther than he's intending here. But the one definition I found that I really like, that I think fits a little bit the way we understand the word conversation, is the way we interact with other people. Interacting with other people is not just talking. It's the things we do. The song we're singing, it says, can the world see Jesus when they look at your life? When you interact with people, they get an impression of you. You've communicated something. And Paul says, I want you to be an example of the believer in that particular area of your life. When other people talk about you, especially when you're not present, what do they say? Maybe to put yourself in those shoes a little bit better is when you talk about somebody else to one of your friends and they're not around, maybe just now think about what kind of things are you saying about that person. Now, you don't know that person as well as that person knows themselves, most likely. But think about how you handle that situation, and then think about what that person might have told their friend about you. Did they handle things the same way? When you interact with people, you become someone to them, and that's how they're going to talk about you. What is it that people see or feel or hear or sense when they're around you and when they're interacting with you? What kind of things do they remember? Are you an honest person? Are you fair? Or Can't they depend on what you say? Or do you take advantage of them? Are you dependable? If you say you're going to show up somewhere at a certain time, do you show up at that time or a little earlier or a little later? You can kind of, that's one I think about a lot. Because you go to a meeting and there are certain people you expect to be there when you get there. And there are certain people you expect to be there after you get there. And they expect you to be there before they got there. If you expected them to be there. We have a character that goes around and displays itself in different ways. The Old Testament says to love your neighbor. And that was, the New Testament says a whole law based on that. But all of the law, and you can read through it, I'm not talking just about the sacrifice things, actually just leave them out. There's a lot of laws, a lot of little laws that you can read in the Old Testament. And they're about how to treat your neighbor. How to handle situations that come up. And one of the things you will read, and the prophets talk about this one, is fair balances. Like when they're weighing things out to sell, that was an important thing to God. The Israelites were supposed to have just balances. They were not to have balances like the other nations. If you went and traded with an Israelite, you could expect a fair deal. That's the way God wanted it. It's part of loving your neighbor. John 13:35 says that all men will know that you're my disciples by your love for each other. And that love is demonstrated in how we interact. It's an important thing to God. Our conduct, our conversation, our lifestyle, how we relate. Timothy talks about people that you want to choose to be elders or leaders in your church. One of the things was they were supposed to have a good, I'll use the term we used the other day, a good report with people that are outside your fellowship. That was an important thing. When people thought about them, not just in your congregation or in your brotherhood, but outside, they thought of them as good people. They were dependable people. John, in one of his next books, actually, I want to read this one to you. It's the little one-chapter book. 3 John. John mentions a person. I just read through this the other day. It's really jumped out at me. 3 John, verse 12 says, Demetrius has a good report of all men. So he could have been a leader. Yea, we also bear record. Whoops, I missed the phrase. That's the very phrase I wanted. He has a good report of all men and of the truth itself. I really like that. Here's a man that had a good report of people, but not only that, he had a good report of truth itself. That really was amazing to me. Be an example that truth itself will back up. What does this mean with our talk? You've heard people use the expression, practice what you preach. Right? Well, if you're going to be a good example in these areas of a faithful person, the things that you say and the things that you do, people will know fit together. They'll see them fit together. Remember I said if you believe there's a God, your life will show it? You'll act like there's a God. If you believe He cares about you, you'll act like He cares about you. If you believe that God wants you to love the person right beside you, doesn't matter who it is, a friend or an enemy, you'll act like it. And someone's car is having an emergency. If you walk in step with your talk will have kick. I promise you, people will listen to you. If they know that the things that you say are the things that you do, they'll listen to you. Doesn't mean they'll agree with you. Doesn't mean they'll do what you say. But you will have some kick behind your words. And I'm using that in a nice way. I don't want you to go around kicking people. People will listen to you. And they will be more likely to at least give some credence to what you say. And I want to emphasize this because we're talking about the mind. If you are thinking, talking, and walking God's thoughts, the authority of eternity has your back. Your whole life will be backed up by God and everything He has created to be. And it doesn't mean that it'll always feel like it right now. As a matter of fact, my impression of this life is it's a test whether you believe that. Do you really believe that if your walk, talk, and thoughts are God's thoughts, that when it's all said and done, you will be vindicated? And I think, I believe God will put every one of us through some test in life that tells ourselves whether we really believe that. I often wonder about Job and what happened with him. And what's really amazing to me, I thought about this not too long ago. You know, we know what happened. We have the story right at the beginning, what was going on. Do you know that Job never found out, at least as far as we know? I don't think he read the book of Job. Job, probably to the day he died, really never knew what that was all about. But right in the middle of it, at the beginning of it, he expressed his belief that there was a God and that he believed God cares about him. Famous verse in Job, at least it's famous to me anyhow, is that if God kills me, I will trust him. That's a trust that goes the whole way to the end. Do you believe that about God? If God actually kills you, will you still trust him? I was thinking about Josiah and Jason, okay, the names you gave them. The one is kind of a sad story. And the other one looks like it has hope. But do you know that both of those boys now are in the hands of somebody that loved them dearly? And what he does with them will be the right thing. That can give me at least some confidence that whatever happens to them is going to be fair in the hands of God. And when you and I find out what happened, we will say yes to God. And we will now trust our life to him. Charity. Be an example in charity. The word I like for charity, in the Bible we often say it's a word for love, and that's a good translation. But there's a word, two words I like to use for charity that gives it a little bit more of a hands-on, feet-on, whatever feel, and that is goodwill. Because we have goodwill stores, they'd be called charity stores. But what's a goodwill store? Well, it's a place, fortunately I'll give it a bad description first. It's a place where people take everything they don't want and hope that somebody else does, okay, and that they'll actually buy it, okay? It's kind of like a yard sale. But the person that made the goodwill store was trying to take advantage of something because they wanted to bless other people, give them something that they needed. And hopefully they could use what people didn't want to get it done. But a goodwill store is that for people that need something. It's a place where you can go and hopefully find something that you want. What I'd like to do is apply that a little bit practical to me. If you have goodwill in your heart and you see a need, like John's been talking about in the book of 1 John, you will do something. It will generate an action from you that will bless that person and help meet that need. You can't just turn away and say, well, like it says, I think in James, God bless you. God blessing that person means that you're going to actually do something to give them some good. That's charity. Be an example in your youth. And probably it is the best time of your life to do that, to just people. You don't have a lot of responsibilities. You don't have a lot of dependence. And youth nowadays have lots of stuff. We could probably start a Goodwill store just with your own property, right? I think some of my children could. Be that kind of person. The things that God has blessed you with, when you see a need, have the heart that says, can I meet that need with what I have? That is a person of charity. It's a practical display of this word compassion that we talk about. I think John had that up on the board. Charity is a practical display of compassion. It reaches out its hand and touches a need to meet it. I also like to think of charity as an air about a person. Maybe sort of like a perfume or body odor or something. It's just part of the person. Okay? It's a generosity that just comes out of their pores. If you have charity in your heart, that's the way God is. He can't. I'll say it this way. He can't help but help us. Okay? It just radiates. It's a vibe. That's a word that runs around now. It's kind of like a vibe that a person has. Okay? You can see it. Be an example of charity. Or maybe radiant heat. I don't know if you know about radiant heat, but something can be hot and you might not see it's hot, but if you get close to it, you'll feel it. If you get close to a person of charity, you're bound to feel it. God is a giver by nature. He wants us to be givers by nature. And we have it right in this book that He loves cheerful givers. Yesterday, I think I asked you a question if you please God or and how you know. One way you can be sure you please God is by being a cheerful giver, because that resonates with Him. When He sees a cheerful giver, He says, that's me. You aren't at this point, but sometimes if you see your boy do something that you really like to do and he did it with the same passion, you go, oh, that's me. You will please God for sure. He loves a cheerful giver. I like the little story. Actually, it's not a story. It's an account. Jesus saw it happen. Of the many mites mistress versus the bully bag bullies or the bulging bag bullies. Okay? These people went with their bags of coins and dropped them into the temple treasury. And then this little lady comes up and puts in two coins that, if I understand right, in our money don't even match our penny. And do you know which ones bless Jesus? It wasn't the ones that were dumping their bags of stuff in. It was that little old lady, that widow, that put in those two coins. He was blessed by that. It pleased Him. It touched Him because she was being generous. She was giving. She gave, Jesus said she gave all she had. And these other people just gave their pocket change. I don't know what size their pockets were. But that didn't really touch Him. If you want to touch God's heart, you be a person of charity. In your youth, be an example of a believer in charity. Give with both hands. A lot of people give with one hand, and the other hand they're expecting something back. That's not what Jesus wants. Give with both hands. Don't expect something to come back. In spirit, be an example in spirit. Spirit is a hard word for me to really put into words again, what I feel about it, but I'm going to throw some words at you and hopefully you catch it. It's motivation. It's drive. It's intentional. A person with spirit is a person that you really can't stop. Stopping them is a big job. There are people that just kind of coast through life, and all you have to do is get in their way, boing, and they're kind of done. But if you get in the way of somebody that has spirit, you will end up in a fight if you don't get out of their way. And you might not stop them in the process. Be an example of the believer in spirit. If you believe God is real and He cares about you, you act that way no matter what anyone else does to you. They will try to take you out. History is full of people that want to take those kind of people out. They don't want to believe in God and they don't want anyone around that makes them think there is one. Be an example in spirit. I like the example of the little internal combustion engines, especially the ones with the pull start. Okay? They're starting to become obsolete. You can actually get push mowers that have like push button start. That's just lame. Why are you going to want to push a mower after you've push button started anyhow? That doesn't make any sense to me. But this is a difference between a person with spirit and a person without spirit. If there's something about that motor that's not working in the electrical line or in the fuel line, you can make it go, but you have to just pull and pull. And after about, well, depending on who you are, let's go up to 10. After about 10 pulls, you're pretty much done. It's like, and some people won't even wait that long. 3, 5. But theoretically, if you wanted to mow your yard that way, you probably could. Okay? You might have to get someone to help push it, but you could probably work at getting your yard mowed that way. It's a really lame engine. I mean, the only thing good on it is the pull part. Okay. But if you have an engine with spirit, where the electricity is working and the fuel is working, you give that thing one pull, and then you get out of the way. Okay? You just get behind it and push. That engine goes from the inside, and there's power. There are so many people that call themselves Christians that are just pull Christians. Okay, you've got to keep pulling the rope to make them go. That's a lame Christian. And I don't even really like to use that word for them. The word Christian's been pretty much obliterated anyway. They are not a believer. Okay? There's probably another word for them. But they are not a believer. They don't have anything inside that makes them go. But if you really believe there's a God, and your electricity and your fuel is working, it will come from the inside and work its way out. So one story, well, there's two accounts of Jesus' life where that is very obvious. The one, right after he was baptized and he went into the wilderness, it specifically says that he was driven of the Spirit into the wilderness. I used to have no idea what that meant, but I do now. There was something inside of him that says, that's where you go. And he knew it. And there didn't have to be a crew of scribes and Pharisees and Sanhedrin that says, the Lord's telling you to the wilderness. Here's your ticket. There's the golf cart. Get going. None of that. He went because it came from the inside out. And things happened there. And the other time was at the end of his ministry, when he went from northern Israel to Jerusalem. It says he set his face like a flint to go to Jerusalem. There was nothing going to stop him. Peter tried partway down, and Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." That is where he knew the Spirit was telling him to go. Be an example of the believer in spirit and in faith. Be a person of conviction, and the word that we tied with it today is obedience. If you know the Spirit is telling you something, God is telling you something, start walking. Abraham got up and started walking toward that mountain. Jesus started to the wilderness, started to Jerusalem. Peter got off the house roof and went to Cornelius' house. Whenever you know there is something very clear in your mind that God is telling you, be a man of faith. Be persuaded, be convicted, and be obedient. You cannot convince a person of faith to act differently than they believe without first convincing them to believe something else. It's just the way it works. Be an example of the believer, of the faithful. And Hebrews 11, I love that chapter, is story after story. And then you know there's a whole bunch of stories I haven't been told of people that have taken what God said and took it the whole way to the end because they believed who God was. And you know what I like about chapter 11 of Hebrews? The last verse says, the list isn't finished until you're in it. You read it. God wants it that way. He wants you to have your name in that list. Hebrews 11 is an unfinished chapter of the Bible. And your name is to be there. It's what God wants. Faith is physical evidence of a spiritual promise. Physics is something you can see. Spirit is something you can't. And it says at the beginning of there, faith is the evidence of things you can't see. It's the physical obedience of a spiritual promise. You and I putting flesh to God's word. And purity, I'm just going to read what I have here about that one because we've talked about that. What does it mean to be clean? Or as James says, to be unspotted from the world. If I am a pure believer in Jesus, you will notice that everything about me is flavored by him. Anything noticed otherwise will be confessed, and under construction, there'll be tape all around it because God is still working on you and you're following him. The phrase I like about the disciples in Acts is the people took notice that they had been with Jesus. And it's because they believed who Jesus was. We're fast running out of time. I want to mention the three things that he says afterwards, or I think it's three, where the next verse says, "Till I come, give attention to reading, exhortation, and doctrine." Those are three ways, three avenues that you can go about learning how to be this example. And I just want to mention them quickly because I think it's important for young people. I already mentioned one the other day. Have a good role model. Make sure you have a good role model in your life. But reading is an important thing. First and foremost is the Bible. And if you haven't read through the Bible at your age, I really encourage you to, especially if you're going to call yourself a Christian. It's kind of lame for a person to have a piece of equipment that they don't know how it works because they never read the manual. And it's kind of lame for a person to call themselves a believer who hasn't read the book that shows you lots of examples and gives you lots of instruction. I just think it's important. And read through it often. I didn't read through it often as I should have. When I was your age, I read through it a couple of times and then got married and had children. And I'm not sure how that affects a person mentally and spiritually. But I should have read through it more. It would have been a big help. But in the last several years, I've been doing it again, and it's been powerful. You will always find something new. You will always be blessed by something. And there has been nothing in my life that has matched reading through the Bible. You can't do it in really one setting, but in a short amount of time. The shortest time I've done it is in 90 days. I want to try to do it in 60 days. But when you read through it that fast, of course you can't like dig everything out, but there are things that start to come together that you won't see if you just take this little piece and then this little piece. I've been so blessed by that. There's Bible plans, reading plans. And I also, I would encourage you to maybe listen to the people in your life that give you direction this way, but I do encourage you to read it in other versions. It has been an invaluable blessing to me to read it in other versions. Just things said in different ways. Commentaries, I think, can be good. I've always been frustrated by them, so I don't use them very much. But Brandon has been blessed by them many times over, and maybe if I'd read them more, I would be. Do book studies, history studies in the Bible. I went through the Old Testament one time, picking out all the things that referred to time and sort of put together a timeline. That was interesting. And reading history, biographies, those are wonderful ways to see examples of other people, how they put to practice this. Some of them started young to do that. Allegories, and with caution, even some novels, good novels. I will give you one name that when I was your age, I was blessed by. I feel like they permanently helped my spiritual life, and that was several books by George MacDonald. He was a predecessor to C.S. Lewis. And he has some novels. Some people look at the covers and say, oh, you don't want to read that. But I did. You found out I read The Shack too. Those novels are different than, I haven't read a lot of other novels, but they challenged me spiritually. Like I don't think some other books could have. The main characters that he has in those books are people that are struggling. What is life all about? What is the meaning of life? And they're pointed in the right direction. This is a real blessing. Okay, good. I've seen some of them up there. Exhortation, that's a big word. I'm going to make it really simple for you. It can involve more than this. But be willing to develop close relationships with people that will challenge your life. To me, that's the platform of exhortation. Exhortation happens in relationships. Iron sharpens iron. Faith for the wounds of a friend, the encouragement of a friend that's willing to tell you the truth about yourself is awesome. Very strengthening. And doctrine, again, I'll make that one really simple. It's basically just teaching. If there's good teaching, be willing to listen to it and say, what in there is going to give me direction on how to be a good example of the believer? These are all mind influencers. Everything that he mentions here, influence our mind. Choose them purposefully and intentionally. Don't just be a person that's going to read anything. I always read the foreword or something that tells me, is this book even headed the direction I want to go? And if it is, I'll look deeper. If it's not, I'll forget it. And if you can tell by reading a few of those things about it that it's going to talk to a part of you that does not need help, then don't read that book. But if it's going to talk to a part of you that needs strengthening, dig in and read it. It will influence your thought processes. It will help you know what to meditate on. That's a mind thing. And that will affect your will. It's something you can give your life to, which will affect the profiting. That's the next verse down here. Something that is profitable. It will come out and produce good things. In the end, it says, it will be the salvation of those who listen to you and the salvation of your own soul. Transform salvation by the renewing of your mind. God wants to change your life, and he wants to start with how you think so that it can get into the rest of your physical body. Let's just take a little time. Does anyone have something you'd like to say? I might rob a little extra 5 minutes here if we can, because I want to sing these songs again. That is definitely a sign of an humble person. And the Bible also says it's a wise person. Humility and wisdom are, they're pretty closely, they're like real close cousins. Well, it was a lot of stuff. And before we leave, I will again pray for you that God can take all of this and make a difference in your life. Well, let's take just the time to sing through these three songs. We'll start with the Micah medley. And maybe you want to stand up to sing these. And we'll sing.